I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Warning Shots, a short feuds podcast proudly presented to you from the SB Nation Podcast Network. I'm Michael. I'll be your host tonight, joined by short fuse regular contributor Aiden and manager of the blog, Aaron. Gentlemen, it's good to be back. How are we feeling?
Feeling all right. As long as we're not talking about Arsenal, I feel great. But unfortunately, that's what we're here to do, and so my mood might go down. But don't worry, I am got an old-fashioned here with me to help keep the spirits up.
Aiden, how about yourself?
Well, I recently had two COVID-19 tests, and I'm fairly sure that the experience of having the brain tickler twice was probably more enjoyable than watching Arsenal trying to attack these days. So, you know.
Would you rather take a third test or a headbutt from one Nicola Pepe?
I mean, the third test is going to have more like actual impact on my face. So I'll take the headbutt. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, you know, headbutt is putting it generously for what Nicola Pepe got red carded for.
It was a love tap, basically.
It was a head love tap.
Yeah.
Aiden and I, off the podcast, had a little bit of a discussion about this, but it seems wrong to me that is in the laws, that is a headbutt, and is treated the same way as Zinedine Zidane's full-on smashing his forehead into Materazzi in the World Cup final. Is also a headbutt. You know, those two things are both called headbutts, but they are not the same.
I mean, it's interesting in the sense that, like, we're taught all the time, or when we discuss sort of, like, what happens in football, like, you know, with fouls and things like that, that, like, intent doesn't matter. Like, what actually happens what matters is, you know, the sort of outcome, right? So even if you intend not to injure someone, if you have a bad tackle, you go studs up, you can be shown a red card, like if you end up catching someone and not getting the ball. But with the sort of with the headbutt thing, it seems like intent is very much the sort of how that's sort of decided. Like, you know, Pepe didn't really make that much contact, but it was like the intent of like trying to headbutt the guy that essentially did it for him. I mean, especially with VAR too, because like, you know, you slow that down, it's just like, yes, that's, I mean, like everyone, like as soon as they went back to VAR, it's like, okay, yeah, he's gone.
Well, so because you know that I love to disagree with you about rule interpretations and whatever, you know, I would actually, I'm not even sure that Nicola Pepe like really intended to headbutt him. You know how guys like get up in each other's faces and they like put their heads together? I feel like that's different than actually wanting to headbutt somebody. And my bet is that Pepe really wanted to just kind of get in his face, maybe even forehead to forehead like some guys do, and just kind of basically try and make himself look threatening, because the guy had been clutching and grabbing and shoving him and he lost his cool. Now, as you said, in the VAR world, you know, Pepe has got to know that you can't do that. That, you know, even if you're not trying to headbutt the guy, if you're just trying to get in his face, that you can't do that, because if you make any contact, he's gonna go down like he'd been shot, which he did. And Kieran Tierney took offense to that after the match, I'll point out. And you know, so Pepe has got to be smarter than that. And I think everybody, both, you know, inside the Arsenal locker room and outside, kind of acknowledge that. And so I guess the question is, you know, Mikel Arteta said it was unacceptable and, you know, was very disappointed. Do you, Chrisman, see any additional discipline coming his way from Mikel. You know, he'll miss the next three Premier League matches, but theoretically he could play on Thursday against Molde.
I will answer that question, but I want to start with a quote, which I think touches on the point that you didn't think that Pepe actually went in with the intent to headbutt. And I think there's a great quote said, "Everyone's a gangster until a gangster walks in the room." And I think for a minute, Pepe wanted to intimidate. And as soon as it came back his way, he didn't really have a plan. And so I think that led to what was leaning his head in the VAR era. It's just, like Aiden said, it's absolutely going to happen. I think even like maybe 6 years ago, MLS adopted a rule where any touching of the face is just an automatic red. Like if you dribble past somebody and your arm flew behind you trying to like keep them off your shoulder and touch their face, it's considered a red, which
football's
is super
going soft.
Yeah, but it's super weak, but it's one of those of like, it, as long as you enforce it and everyone knows, which everyone knows a headbutt is going to be a red card, then I think everybody can be okay with it. Now, in the sense of dropping him, I would have dropped him from performance alone, let alone the red card. So for me, the only downfall is that his suspension probably puts Willian in the next couple matches a bit more. Rumor did come out today that Arteta is going to hand Pepe a lifeline and start him in Europa League. But maybe part of that is like, hey, you're not going to play in the Premier League until Mesut Ozil does. So at this point, we got your roster for Europa League. Get your minutes in here since you're tired of sitting on the bench and you go to international duty and that's what you say.
I mean, like, I'm a bit surprised that Pepe is reportedly going to play on Thursday, and I would have been fine if he were banished to the under-23s for a good 10 days, but, you know, I guess we don't know what's going on internally, and I made that point on Sunday when people were upset that Willian started after flying to Dubai during the international break.
For business
reasons.
Hanging
out with Jack Wilshere.
For business reasons. He has image rights stuff that he has to do.
That seems like something that you could have done over Zoom during a pandemic. You know, just...
Or, you know, something that you could have told the club beforehand that you were going to do, because apparently he actually didn't inform Arsenal that he was going to Dubai over the break.
You know, again, the whole, like, pandemic thing I think also applies here, too, where it's like, maybe you could have done that over Zoom.
I think he shot Peter Cech a text to let him know what was going on, but he didn't realize that him and Peter Cech aren't at the same club anymore. So,
Peter Cech curses us still. I mean, so like again, we don't really know what's going on internally, and maybe it's been dealt with from sort of a discipline standpoint, and everyone's ready to move on. I guess what I will say is that like the other thing is that like he does actually, we actually do need him to play just from a numbers standpoint, because we cannot use Bukayo Saka in any Europa League game. I mean, he played too many games for England in the international break, and I think ideally he would not have played at all on Saturday, or Sunday rather, and then he had to come on, he got some sort of knee injury, and we don't know the full news yet. So I think, like, you know, you cannot use Saka.
So we saw heading into this international break, Jose Mourinho, I believe it was this international break, Jose Mourinho was whining about, and I forget the gentleman's name, one of the Arsenal assistant coaches is also an assistant coach for Wales. And because Gareth Bale was carrying some sort of an injury, he was complaining that, you know, oh, well, they won't treat our player right and they'll subject him to getting possibly more injured and, you know, blah, 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 as Jose Mourinho is wont to do. That's a, you know, a roundabout way of saying, well, you know, that actually happened with Bukayo Saka, not with the, you know, the coach situation, but being overplayed on the international break. And it actually happened to Kieran Tierney as well. Kieran Tierney played, I believe, all of Scotland's matches. And he has played a ton of matches, and we know that he's a guy who's injury prone as well. Is it time for Mikel Arteta to, you know, go in the media about how much his guys are getting used over the international break and try and, you know, send a not so subtle message to their international coaches, like, hey, we need, these guys need some rest, you know, because Bukayo Saka is possibly Arsenal's best player right now, and you know he is as a Mr. Wenger. Goodness, can't sort out my tongue. As Mr. Wenger used to say, I can't talk. He's in the red zone. You know, he needs.
I mean,
time
it goes along with
recover.
The bombing, sleeping on hotel or not hotel airport. Airport floors, which is probably the last place anyone in the world should be sleeping right now, is on an airport floor. So yeah, we have a high usage rate for a lot of these guys, and from a number standpoint, is what which I'm touching on too, is if you're not going to play him in the Premier League, which one you can't for three games, but if you're saying, hey, not only you're not going to play for three games, but you're going to be dropped until let's say 2021, and I'm with Aiden, put him, banish him to the U18s, put him with Per, make him do whatever it is to earn a spot back. But we also have to rotate. And so maybe the plan was not to start him in Premier League games going forward, but now suddenly he did that himself. So now you have to say, well, you better go earn it in Europa League. I think possibly if we were in Champions League and we were going somewhere considered glamorous, you know, you're going to Nou Camp, you're going to Bernabeu, you're going to San Siro, you'd probably say, hey, you're not going to make this trip. But now suddenly the trip is to Norway, and you're like, hey, it's a cold, rainy night in Norway. You better get on with it, and you better play a full 90 because you don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. So I think there may be a bit more flip of the mindset of if we were going to a more sexy destination that he wouldn't get to go. But because it is Europa League and Mikel has prioritized the tournament along with the Premier League, then he's going to have to play.
Yeah, I mean, like, Pepe's going to play in this game, and quite a few of Arsenal's regular starting players are not going to. Like, Aubameyang's not going to play on Thursday. Bukayo Saka's not going to play on Thursday. I would
be stunned if he even traveled.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm sure they left him in London.
I mean, in midfield, it's probably going to be Jackson Ceballos because you don't have an option there, but like, you know, you're not gonna see. Like,
I bet Willock play it starts again.
Yeah,
yeah, like, it might be the same three in the
it might it, yeah, it very well might be. But like, you're not like, look, I agree, Crispin. It's actually like, you know, that sort of flip of the mindset where it's sort of like you are gonna play 90 minutes, and this is the 90 minutes you're getting because this is the level that you're at right now. The level that you're at right now is you're gonna play with Cedric.
Here's the other issue, though. You know, we talk about who Arsenal have to play and their, I guess it's a question of squad depth and, you know, a little bit of injuries factor into it. But also, it's, you know, if Nicola Pepe is not playing there, who is? William? Okay, great. He's, you know, he's been pretty dreadful.
Came off to injury.
Yeah, he had a slight injury as well. Yeah, you're right. And after that, it's, you know, a kid. You know, Arsenal's squad depth is non-existent right now. And, you know, circling back to the point about fixture congestion and all of that, it's been something that Jurgen Klopp has talked about a lot, and he has been forced to rotate his squad because of injuries and whatever. But you look at Liverpool, and they put out some cobbled-together 11 against Leicester, and they thrashed them 3-0. You know, if Arsenal put out its second 11 in the Premier League, they get waxed. I mean, the first 11 lost 3-0 to Aston Villa. You know, Arsenal's second 11 would just, it'd be awful.
To be fair, the second 11 did beat Liverpool in Project Restart.
I would also say, this is completely off topic, but if I watched that second half with Nelson, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Willock out there for a bit, Bukayo Saka, pretty much the only one who didn't get on was Eddie Nketiah. But I've said this for years, I'm willing to ride out young guys and let us take our licks that way than see some of these bums who are Premier League veterans or high price tags who just aren't cutting it. I'd rather just see these guys grow and all know that we're going to take licks. And I know sometimes we'll upset some people, but I know other times we'll get thrashed. And for me, I would just consider it part of the growth path. But I would at least these guys care, or like the body language. And I know that's not everything, but for me, they're willing to work.
And oh yeah, I'd much rather have an XG under one and, you know, five shots with those guys on the pitch than watch Willian on the pitch doing the exact same thing.
I mean, the problem is that, like, I think if you ask everyone who watch it, everyone who's an Arsenal fan, like right now, like, would they rather see, you know, Willian out there being completely fucking useless, or like, you know, Reece Nelson doing, I mean, and like Reece Nelson does essentially very similar things.
Who has impossibly small shin guards, by the way.
Very tiny.
I don't know. Did you guys see the pictures of him?
His shin guards,
been like that since he's debuted for Arsenal.
They are so small. They're like Jack Grealish levels of short.
Alex Iwobi used to have pretty short small shin pads too, but yeah, I mean, like, if you
wouldn't
ask
it be nice to have Alex Iwobi making runs like he did for Everton on the weekend for Arsenal still.
Theo Walcott scoring goals.
But yeah, I mean, like, I think everyone would like rather see like Willock, Nelson, Saka, etc., etc. And I mean, Saka, I think, you know, you actually
the hell in, boys.
You separate Saka from Willock and Nelson, because like Willock and Nelson might not end up being more than like squad depth, but Saka is very clearly like literally one of the best players in the team. But like everyone would like to see that at this stage. The problem is that's not the direction that this club went with, right? This club went with signing Willian. This club went with re-signing Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. This club went
with 4 more years for Cedric.
Yeah, right, Cedric. Signing, you know, look, Thomas Partey, £45 million. I mean, he's that, you know, there's a lot of talk of, like, when we got Partey, about how, like, you know, how there's some in the analytics community who were, you know, talking about, you know, he's too old or whatever, and like talking about him like he's a decrepit 27 year old, and he's not. But like, I think the point that Bear's making is that he is, you know, this is investing in now, not like 3 years from now. This is
Arsenal really missed Thomas Partey against Leeds.
Yeah.
I mean, because the thing that he does the best is progress the ball up the pitch, which then allows you to build an attack. And, you know, I saw passing statistics. There were basically no progressive passes from center backs, which, you know, David Luiz wasn't in the lineup. So that's why we didn't have any from the center backs. And Thomas Partey wasn't in, and so we didn't get any from the midfield. Although I think part of that is also tied to some of the bigger issues that we have with Arsenal's attack, is that even if Granit Xhaka or Danny Ceballos or whoever is back there, you know, they have to have somebody to play the ball to. And we all know, if we've beaten this dead horse time and time again, that Arsenal need a creative midfielder. But, you know, they don't have one on the roster right now, and that won't be fixed until January. Another problem is there's so little movement in front of the midfield that, you know, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is, I don't really know what's going on with him. But either way, the other guys up there just aren't moving. Watching the Leeds match, watching Leeds move, the way their attackers move in and out and make runs and check back, and then comparing that to Arsenal's attack, where everybody has just stood next to their defender, it was just a study in polar opposites. And, you know, you're not going to generate chances and shots and final third touches if your guys aren't moving.
Well, and I think we've seen, and this is a good transition here to talk about Arteta, but we've seen Arteta's plan in 1A, and we've seen what 1A can do against all assortment of teams now. And we know what his 1A is. Especially, it stood out to me against Leeds, is Leeds, And Beelzebul is completely different in their pressing and their relentlessness than the Gegenpress from Klopp and even from City and their triggers to press. But as high as Leeds kept coming to us and as quickly as they did, I bet Bernd Leno went long more times than he probably has all of Arteta's reign. And so then suddenly our one thing that worked against good teams was playing out from the back and counterattacking and connecting and countering quickly. But then this time, Leno's trying to skip it over the top. And at that point, you're not doing the thing that worked for you, but you also are now doing route one. But also, I mean, it's not like Aubameyang, because you don't have Olivier Giroud up there to win the header, right? Like, this isn't a team that's built to go over the top like that. Now, every once in a while, Tierney can release a ball that Aubameyang can get on down the left, but it's not something that game in and game out is going to work for. So really, I mean, that's what I noticed more than anything was like how many times we tried to go over, and it was like it wasn't conducive to what we're going to try to do, but it also wasn't conducive to altering our tactic to be better in the match. And that's even when we had 11, not just when we had 10.
Well, and part of the problem also was that Leeds were essentially man-marking both of Ceballos and Xhaka. If you can take screenshots of how the setup was, but basically when the Arsenal center backs were on the ball, they had a guy tied to both of the midfield pivots. And so, you know, as a coach, as a team, you know, one, footballers should be able to recognize that, and somebody like a Joe Willock or one of the outside backs, you know, somebody's got to say, hey, you know, our center backs don't have an outlet. I need to make myself available. I need to drop deeper and provide myself, provide my teammates a passing option. But that's also something that Mikel Arteta has to recognize and say, okay, well, you know, those guys are marked. So, you know, I have to tell somebody to drop back further. You know, there's just, and this kind of speaks to your point, Chris, about, you know, plan A is that there doesn't really seem to be a very good plan B with Arsenal. And Mikel Arteta really so far has seemed to struggle with making the correct in-game adjustments. I think he's pretty good at setting up a tactical plan before the game going into how Arsenal are going to match up against a team, especially when they're playing offensive powerhouse teams. But I'm not sure that he has shown us yet that he's all that great at adjusting.
I actually disagree. I think when you look back at Project Restart, one of the big features of Project Restart were the in-game adjustments post the water breaks that happened in each half. Like, and that was that Arteta essentially uses like a coaching timeout, and it was notable, you know, how much that actually did help Arsenal. And I actually think that not having them is hurting, in part because I think it lessens Arteta's ability to actually make those adjustments and actually say, I mean, I think one thing that he is he's a very active coach. And I think the way that Arsenal are right now is he needs to actually say to someone like Joe Willock, like, Joe, you've got to drop a little bit deeper and provide another option, or say to like Hector Bellerin, like, Hector, I want you to come in narrow. So then that means the center backs have an option, and we can, and like, if Gabriel can't pass to, you know, one of his midfielders, all of a sudden that means Nicolas Pepe is isolated 1v1 with the left back. And I think that, you know, I think the movement is completely static. So on one hand, like, while we're all, I think, immensely frustrated by, for example, Nicolas Pepe and sort of the lack of return that we're getting on this signing, it's not as if anyone else in the attack looks good. Outside from, again, Bukayo Saka. He's the only player, he's the only attacking player, the only one who looks any good right now. And
let me ask you guys a question.
Hey, we should just play Aubameyang centrally. That'll be the cure. Oh wait, he was utterly non-existent
playing centrally. He did take more shots than he has in like weeks. So it worked in that sense.
I mean, shots in the first half. Let me ask you guys a question.
Okay.
Because we're talking about the team being static, and today on The Athletic, I was reading There was a report on Terry Henry and his first year with Montreal Impact and the coaching style and how he's learned from his time at Monaco and his time in the youth ranks at Arsenal, being with the Belgian national team and now being in charge. And they showed the famous clip from a couple years ago when he was doing punditry and he was talking about Guardiola. And he showed what happened when Guardiola, Henry had scored a goal in the first half, but he broke Guardiola's rules of like positioning. And so Guardiola subbed him out at half and like Henry was like in disbelief, but it showed him like, hey, I know like Pep was firm in what he expected from his players in the buildup, starting from the back. And pretty much what it came down to is like split the field in half. And then you also like lengthwise split it in half. And then until you got to the final third, you had to stay on your halves. So like if you're a right winger, if there was no coming over to the left side at any point before the final third, just because the ball wasn't coming your way, which is what Henry did to score the goal. My question is, with all the staticness, and I'm assuming Arteta has these same principles. So if these guys are standing because this is where the handbrake is on, like this is where they're supposed to be. They know, if nothing else, they're supposed to be in that spot. Is it possible that Arsenal as a squad are not an intelligent team? So we don't have people that can be in the position Arteta wants them to, but also realize they have to play within themselves and move within themselves within the confines of his system. Like my question is, are they not intelligent enough to play the way that he wants at the moment?
I think it's a mix of that and then also not being good enough.
Yeah, I was going to sort of say something similar to what Aiden said. I'm not sure how much we can evaluate anybody on Arsenal's roster right now, at least when it comes to their ability to play in a team setup. It's kind of a tired excuse with sides that are underperforming and new managers. You know, they got to get the right players in place, but Arsenal really do have to get the right players in place. You know, you look at sort of what they do or really don't do, because they don't do anything when they have the ball on attack. There's no fluidity. There's no, you know, I wrote about this a little bit. There's no, okay, our offensive plan is we're going to give it to Thomas Partey and he's going to, you know, look to pass to either player X or player Y. And then they're going to have options 1, 2, and 3. You know, somebody's going to make a run for a through ball. Somebody's going to check back. A winger's going to tuck in or make an overlap. You know, there's no sort of normal progression of the ball up the pitch. It just goes to, okay, let's, you know, hit it into Pepe and see if he can beat somebody, or hit it into Aubameyang, or, you know, see if he can beat somebody. And so you can't really assess, going back to your original question, you can't really assess whether Arsenal's players are intelligent or creative enough, because they're not getting any kind of a chance.
I think also the other thing, you know, I do think that Arteta has tried to instill some of this sort of a little more rigid positional play, right, and trying to instill some of these attacking patterns into Arsenal's game. I do think the quality of certain players is a big issue. But the interesting thing is to sort of contrast this when Arteta first started managing Arsenal, like they were not as bad as this. Attacking wise, like, you know,
Mesut Ozil was also playing.
Sure, but I mean, like, sure, but like the other, the thing, like, when you, if you look back at those games, like, there was actual movement happening. Like, there was, so I think, like, what Arteta first did when he came in was he actually made things very simple. He made things very simple in terms of, like, five channels in attack, and also altered some things with defensive positioning, and it worked. And I think what he's been trying to do is sort of move from that sort of phase of like of some very simple fixes to like try and instill what he wants to do, and I think he's finding difficulty in that. I don't know if that's something that can necessarily be solved very easily, because it's sort of I don't know. It's a little bit of a fork in the road situation. But I do
one thing that would solve it is, you know, if they could get Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang going again. You know, it's tough when you're getting very little service, and one of the, again, I should really stop talking about things that, you know, people do and talk about offline because nobody knows what we're talking about. But Aiden and I had a conversation about some in the analytics world of football were talking about how Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is a case in point example of a attacker over 30 entering decline. And Aiden's reaction, and I think that it is correct based on what we've said about Arsenal not really having much of an attack and not being able to evaluate players, is there's no way you can know whether Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is actually in decline or just in some sort of weird slump, because he's hardly getting any chances. You know, in the Leeds match, that spinning volley from about, what, 10 yards out or so was the only real even half chance at goal that he had all match. So, you know, you can't, it's difficult to even begin to say what or figure out what's wrong with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, because, you know, you just don't even get a chance to see him in action.
Though, to be fair, and Aaron, I'm going to bring up something that's very close to your heart. He did have the shot that should have given Arsenal a penalty.
Oh, yeah. The handball that wasn't? Yeah, that's... we could have an entire podcast about the handball law. And they're still... I mean, I just saw yesterday and today, they're still going back and forth, IFAB and FIFA and all that, about what the rule is and the interpretations. Yeah, that's just a mess.
Well, unanimous agreement here that that was a handball, and unanimous agreement that it's time for an ad break. So we will be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, welcome back to Warning Shots, a Short Fuse podcast. We're just wrapping up our agreement on the handball that was from a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang shot against Leeds United. Gentlemen, we've covered Pepe. We've covered our scoreless drought. We've covered tactics. We've covered dropping players. So really getting around the spectrum. One thing I'd like to touch on before we wrap up today is Aaron wrote an article that was maybe not verbatim here, but is Nicolas Pepe our biggest bust of a signing? And so I just want to touch on that real quick. He obviously is our biggest sign ever at Arsenal. Right now he had an incident. He's under fire from everyone. We should discuss at least if he actually is. Does he have time to salvage it? Do Arsenal and him have time to salvage it? Is there something amicably possible for them to come together or part ways in the future? So, what do you think?
I mean, so I guess I'll get it started because I wrote it, and I'll just kind of tell people who may not have read the article what I said. I basically said that when you look at it from a return on investment standpoint, a production for the price paid, it is without a doubt the worst signing in Arsenal's history. When you sign a guy and shatter your transfer record, he needs to be a player who is making an impact every single match or almost every single match. It can't be a guy who, you know, doesn't even secure a starting place, drifts in and out of matches, and, oh, hey, he kind of did something nice. Now, that's distinct from evaluating Nicola Pepe as a player. He still could become a useful player for Arsenal. He's shown flashes of talent, flashes of being able to do things that a lot of footballers can't. So I think that that's the way back, you know, that there is a way back for him, and that's the way back. It's for him to bring a little consistency to his play and do some of the things that we know he can do because he showed us, you know, he showed us them.
And Kristen, you asked like something along the lines of like, is there a way back for Pepe? And the way, like, there actually has to be. Like this, there has to be a way back for him. There has to be a way for him to become a crucial component of Arsenal's attack, because otherwise it is going to be a bust of a signing. Like, if we're in a position where, and I think we are in this position right now, and I think we were in this position even before the Leeds game, but if we're in a position where this summer, you know, or the summer of 2021, the best thing for Arsenal to do is to take, you know, a £40 million hit on Pepe, perhaps even more, or somewhere around there, and move him on and get someone else, that's the signing's a bust.
That's however many millions of dollars that, you know, because they're spent on a Pepe replacement, can't be spent elsewhere, like on an attacking midfielder.
Right. I mean, like, and yeah, so like the implications of Pepe not working are huge, right? I mean, in the same way, you know, there are huge implications if Thomas Partey ends up not working out. Not as much money, but still a lot of money. But yeah, there has to be a way back for Pepe. There has to be a way for him to become important to Mikel Arteta. There has to be a way for him to become to start producing, because right now it's not working out, and we're all sitting here saying it's not working out, and it's just looking more and more like a huge waste of money. And yeah, I mean, you have to at times separate the player from the deal. Like, Nicola Pepe didn't ask to be signed for £72 million. And if he'd been signed for 30 million, everyone would be sitting here saying like, yeah, okay, fair enough. I mean, the like fascinating thing, if you want to think about it in terms of recruitment, is like when you look, it's that he essentially had the same season two years in a row. He had some jump in like expected goals, but like the biggest difference that happened between 2017-18 and 2018-19 was he took 9 penalties.
But you have to assume that Arsenal, when they're doing their business, like, recognize that very simple fact.
Genuine question. Do you? Like,
the dude who lost his job?
There's two people involved in it. Both have a 3-letter first name. One's Don, one's Kia.
Yeah.
So,
and assuming makes an ass out of you and me.
No, but I mean, honestly, even for Rolls and Leahy and, you know, whoever else was involved in that deal, you know, they work at a professional football club. They have to at least be able to understand the simple boxcar stat of goals scored
from the run of play versus from the penalty spot. Of course.
You would hope.
I'm
skeptical.
One of the major issues, and everyone can see this, is that whether it was Unai Emery or whether it's Mikel Arteta, and especially with Mikel Arteta, the player in the system and what Pepe was thriving in at Lille is nowhere close to the way that Arsenal have played are playing currently or are going to try to be playing in the future.
So
and there's people that are, and players, I should say, that are system players, right? Like Jamie Vardy is I do think he could do it on other teams, but he is thriving in the system that he came into at Leicester and that has continued to be built around his strengths.
And so that
I don't believe Pepe's strengths are anything we're trying to do at Arsenal.
That makes me think of sort of one of my criticisms of Mikel Arteta is that, you know, and granted, I said earlier on this podcast that, you know, we do have to be patient and give him time to get a few more of the players that he wants in. But at the same time, a great manager or a great coach in any sport isn't rigidly wedded to his system. You know, you look at Bill Belichick, you know, and the different forms that the New England Patriots offense took under him with Tom Brady at the helm. Some years they were a really, really good running team. Some years they played the short passing game. They had Randy Moss and Tom Brady started chucking it deep. You know, you have your systems and the things you want to do as a coach, but you also have to adjust somewhat to the personnel that you have and try to accentuate the strengths of your players and minimize the negatives. Mikel Arteta's shoulders. He's got to put the players in a position to succeed.
That you've got to be able to alter. The Belichick thing, outside of his first couple years at the Patriots, is a lot different because of he's usually influencing who's coming in. And so at this point, especially when Arteta first gets there, there's no transfer window. So now we've seen him have, I wouldn't even really count that first January window. So we've seen him have one transfer window. So I think he can adjust what he's trying to do when he has certain players that he actually wants to have. And you, no matter what, every manager, you inherit the squad that's there, you know? And so they have to work within those confines, but I also don't think that doesn't mean that they won't just try to, you know, put a square peg in a round hole until they can get the right person. I think touching on the fee, it's what Aiden said, there has to be a way back, but I almost feel at this point that the reason there has to be a way back is because there's got to be a viable way to part. Not that would it be great if Pepe comes to full fruition and he's banging in 15 league goals a season with 7 to 10 assists? Sure. But even if Pepe had one of those seasons, at this point, I don't really want to extend him. I just don't want to take a major loss on him.
That's the Arsenal way, though. Get a guy in, absolutely kill his resale value, and then, you know, let him walk for free.
I'm not going to argue. I just hope that it's a new way for the new system that is in charge of Arsenal. But I feel like in Pepe's case, like that is everyone needs it to work so that it can actually be a parting of ways. There's like it's going to part at some point. It's just, is it going to be really bad with a huge net loss, or is it like, can we have a slight loss and maybe get a player back or something? So and the tough part is,
so like I actually,
Pulisic was like the same price in the same summer, and then you see Bellingham go to Dortmund for like 25 mil, and you're like, you go to the room.
I mean, Wilfred Zaha would have been a much better buy than Nicola Pepe,
but they were asking, Crystal Palace was asking 100 mil.
Yeah, and they had that barbecue in the Kroenke's backyard, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, at that point, I would save the 28 mil not to have Zaha.
You know, the thing
if it was 28 million, I mean, obviously, this is after the fact and hindsight is 2020. If you're going to spend 72, I would happily spend the extra 28 to have something other than Nicola Pepe and the way he's playing right now.
Yeah, but how different were their overall seasons last year, I guess, would be my question in overall terms of...
Zaha did have a really bad season last year. It's off to a pretty good start this year.
He's too busy at the club trying to get over to Arsenal.
I mean, the thing about the flexibility thing is interesting because, like, look, Arteta's coming from 3 years of being Pep Guardiola's assistant, who, I mean, look, Pep Guardiola is not flexible. He's going to do his system, right? He will make minor tweaks, but it's going to be his thing. And that's actually, like, when we think about the best managers, you know, when we talk about sort of the best managers, they are all very similar. Maurizio Pochettino had his system in place. Again, minor tweaks. You know, you do make some adjustments. Jurgen Klopp, we all know what Jurgen Klopp's system is. Now, you know, Liverpool made it a slight change last season where they weren't necessarily pressing as intensely as they had in previous years. But it was still broadly the same thing. I mean, we're all sitting here talking about how great Leeds were. Bielsa is infamously one of the most inflexible managers in the history of football. So I don't think the flexibility thing is necessarily a bad thing. I do agree that, like, sometimes you do have to adapt to the players that are at hand. I think, if anything, that really kind of just speaks to how, like, broader picture, how bad the recruitment has been, in the sense that, you know, Unai Emery didn't really know what to do with Pepe, and Mikel Arteta, like, quite clearly doesn't really want to use him. So we have, you know, two different managers for which this player is just not work, you know, not suited. And I think, you know, more than anything, that's really a fault of overall recruitment, rather than saying, well, you know, this manager failed because they couldn't get anything out of the player. I mean, I think it's a bigger issue.
Well, you know, going forward, Arsenal have a lot of games coming up in the next month and a half, you know, basically through.
I just calculated we have 7 games in the next 20 days.
Yeah, I mean, the schedule is unbelievably congested through, like, the first week in January. Does Mikel Arteta make adjustments? You know, what does he do? I mean, he has to play. I think the conclusion is he kind of has to use Nicola Pepe in the Europa League for the next few matches. You know, what does he have to do? What can Arsenal do? You know, kind of let's look forward at the next month and a half. I hate to say it, but the outlook is kind of bleak.
I would like to see the team that played on Sunday with David Luiz, Thomas Partey, Bukayo Saka. Like, there were some slightly promising things that happened on Sunday where it wasn't necessary. Like, it wasn't all bad. I know, like, you know, we're really grasping at straws here, but, like, you know, you could sort of see what they were trying to do, and I think if you did have those players who were better at ball progression, you would get, for example, Joe Willock in better positions where he can actually do some running off of the ball rather than carry it 30 yards and then have no one to pass to. So I do think, you know, if you do have the better players in the team, it might have looked slightly better. I mean, that being said, I do think that this is just something that's going to have that the manager is going to have to figure out himself, right? He's going to have to figure it out. He's going to have to do some coaching, right? Like, that's the thing. He's going to just...
I mean, that's the Pep Guardiola way, right? Just get better players, and then it'll work itself out. I'm teasing.
Don't get me started on Pep Guardiola as a great manager. It's really easy to coach the best players in the world.
The 20,000-foot view, too. We're coming in Arteta's 1 year with Arsenal. I still feel like at the moment he was the right hire. For me, one thing for context, we have to remember is that brought in with a short window, COVID-19 happens. Now he's had what was essentially a 3-week summer, where usually he would get like 6 to 8 weeks. They'd get a full preseason, which they didn't get this year. And then international breaks, he's got guys getting their wheels run off. So his first year is not when people will show, like, oh, his first 50 matches as Arsenal manager or whatever it was, they'll take stats like that. We have to remember the context of which his first year has happened, because it is not the first year that Unai Emery got. It is not the first year Wenger got. It's not the first year George got. It's just not going to be the same as anybody else unless they were hired in the second half of last season.
It's also the direct comparison with Emery, I think, falls down for me because it's a much worse team. Arteta inherited a much worse team than Emery inherited.
Absolutely.
And then the other thing too that I think we do have to remember is, like, look, we were dreadful in the last weeks of Unai Emery, and we were dreadful in a very specific way in that, like, we were just giving, like, we were giving up 20 shots at home against, like, Crystal Palace and Southampton, and like 31 shots away at Watford.
We're both pretty good right now, by the way. Just, you know, Crystal Palace and Southampton.
Yeah, but last season they suck. 31 shots away at Watford, who were of course relegated. Like, you know, so yeah. that you know, people were saying that the players were uncoachable, and he did actually come in and coach them and set up a system that worked, and he won an FA Cup. And so there is actual success here. It doesn't look great right now, but I do think that we just need to sort of say, like, look, there is some success, there's some recent success. We need to just, you know, give the rookie manager some time. It was always going to be bumpy.
So can I tell you that the next time there's a match and you're tweeting about Arteta, can I send that quote to
Aiden,
you?
Aiden does it
you
all.
Can.
It's just a bit for him. But I'm looking at Arsenal's schedule in this kind of congested period. You said to take the 20,000 foot view. I'm going to take the 10,000 foot view. Little bit closer in the league. Arsenal have Wolves, Spurs, Burnley, Southampton, Everton, Chelsea, Brighton, West Brom, Crystal Palace through January 12th. I'm looking at that and I'm saying, am I confident that Arsenal are going to beat any of those teams? I'm not. You know, I mean, and there are teams on that list, Burnley, you know, and I said Crystal Palace and Southampton are having good starts to the season. But, you know, Crystal Palace, Southampton, Burnley, West Brom, that's probably the only one I think Arsenal probably will win. And that I would be willing to put money on Arsenal to win. But the rest of those teams, you know, there are teams in there that you, Arsenal, quote unquote, should be beating based on kind of their aspirations and their stature as a club comparatively. But right now, that's not where Arsenal are, you know?
Well, and I think you expect all those names you just put there of the teams to wager the win against Spurs or Chelsea because of...
They play Arteta's well against good team.
Versus the quote-unquote lesser teams, historically lesser teams. Is how I should say it. But that's where I think Aiden made a great point of maybe we just need to get back to simplicity because he has kind of figured out the defense, right? We are giving up less XG. We are giving up less
But we aren't goals. Scoring.
Yes. No, I'd say, but everybody
my,
thought it would
like
be awesome.
My main point, the main thrust of that point is like, I'm not confident that Arsenal are going to beat Burnley because I don't know that we're going to score a goal against Burnley. And like,
yeah, I'm not
that is a terrible place for this club to be based on like, you know, everybody. I'll circle back to something that Rebecca Lowe said at the end of the Arsenal Leeds match. She goes, you know, Arsenal 0 or Leeds 0, Arsenal 0. You know, definitely a better point for Leeds. And my reaction was really that was
okay,
a better
so,
point for
so
Leeds.
So let me.
Arsenal are not good right now.
So what would you do? Would you just sack the manager? Like, would you just go down that route again? Like
absolutely not. I don't think you can sack the manager, but at the same time, I mean, you just unfortunately, I think we just have to kind of gut it out.
Yeah,
you have to. I don't know if this was in the comment section on the site or in the article, but Mikel Arteta has to find ways to manufacture wins. You know, they've got to find. I don't know. They've got to get. I'm not sure creative is the right word, but he has to come up with ways that are going to win matches that Arsenal wouldn't win because right now I'm not sure how many they are going to win. Period. And I'm not. I don't know that I have the
losses
you know,
into draws too, because that was the first draw of the season. But I think overall we played 14 matches this season, all comps, and we had won 10, lost 4, and all 4 were losses in the Premier League. And it's like, we've got to flip some of those to draws. And so, you know, you do that when you're down to 10 men in the whole context of you're like, oh, we're down to 10. We'll look back and say, oh, it was a point. At the moment, it doesn't feel good. Probably won't feel good at any point because we'll know we watched it. But like, I also think not only have to manufacture wins, I think you got to start like clawing your way to some points. Otherwise, you know, the gutting it out becomes even worse.
Yeah, I mean, just to go back to your question, and I don't know the answer, and I'm not sure that there is an answer to what do Arsenal do right now, other than the fact is just kind of grit their teeth and bear it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the reality is that, like, the reality is we were always, I think, going to be inconsistent this season. I think it was always going to be a big ask to make a big jump from where we were last season. We were not a very good team last season. And, you know, this is the sort of reality of this, you know, there's not a lot of time to really make big improvements. So I'm not necessarily surprised that we're not very good. I think we're worse than I was hoping that we would be. But, you know, perversely, about the games coming up, I am like a little bit more confident about like Chelsea and Tottenham than I am about Burnley. And that's something that so what Arsenal have to do right now is we have to manufacture a win, like you said. We've got to figure out a way to beat the Burnleys of this Premier League. And really, I mean, I think long, you know, big picture, we have to hope the manager starts figuring out a way to get the attack working. That's sort of the bigger issue, right? The manager needs to figure this out himself.
Yeah, those are great points. I think we've covered a lot tonight. I believe in Arteta. I think you touched on a really good point. Is initially, especially when he came in, it was a lesser squad. So that initial jump of like the stabilization, if you want to call it that, like seems so big and so significant because the team was so bad. But now, because the stabilization has happened, that next jump or that next step, like not only could it take longer and longer than any of us anticipated and or like, it's a harder step to take.
Because answer to your question, and we have to temper our expectations. You know, our expectations are not, I don't know, I think ours on this pod are, but I think that for a lot of people in the Arsenal universe, the expectations are that they're going to be, you know, a Champions League side, and people have to figure out they are nowhere near that right now, and they have to adjust their expectations accordingly.
And Aaron, on that point, maybe that is why Arteta is trying his best to get it right in Europa League, because he views this as quite possibly the best chance to get to accelerate the timeline of back to Champions League via this competition.
I laugh just because there are going to be some really good teams dropping into the Europa League this year.
Of course, but I'm
better than past years.
Yeah, but like we've been good against good teams. I mean, like I actually wrote in whatever month it was there's preseason that like I kind of expected Arsenal to like I expected the route into the Champions League to be easier through the Europa League because my prediction was that Arsenal were not going to be very good in the Premier League, that it was going to be tough because, you know, because of various inconsistencies from the manager, from players. But that because the Europa League until the round of 32 is just until really the round of 16 is just an absolute joke of a competition, and this is a good cup team, like it's not unreasonable to think that the Europa League was a better route of qualifying for the Champions League.
Okay, well, guys, it's been great touching base again, catching up. I look forward to doing this more frequently over the holidays and as we enter the January window and this congested schedule. It's been a great night, a lot to think on. We're so happy that you guys are tuning in, and continue to chat with us in the comment sections and on socials, everything at The Short Fuse and theshortfuse.com. We will be back soon, but appreciate you tuning in tonight. That's all from me.
Take it easy, everybody.
Bye-bye.